Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood,
Matthew Davis,
and the Roto Gut, Vlad Sedler.
Hello, and welcome to the FTN Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined today by my co-host, Matthew Davis. Matthew, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Paul, and thank you so much for filling in for Vlad Sedler, I should say, as he is not available to talk fantasy baseball, but we are greatly appreciative to have you fill in, and we have a very fun and exciting outline to go over. We'll be talking about recent news, some start-sit conundrums for week one, especially because now we have some postponed games to go over. Small talk, we want to hear what's going on with you with your opening day, and then we're going to have some predictions talking about end of the year awards, World Series predictions, etc. So it should be a fun-filled episode hanging out with you. And it is early over here. It's about 6 o'clock over on the West Coast for me. It's 8 a.m. for you. And so when people start listening to this, we'll be about 24 hours away from opening day, which is just really, really exciting. It kind of feels like Christmas Eve to us.
It really does. I'm so unbelievably excited. Even though we're catching a little bad news this morning with some of the postponements, that's generally something that you expect on the East Coast games. We just hope it doesn't really trickle on into the other games, right? Have that one day, and then hopefully the weather cooperates for the weekend, and we'll talk about what could maybe happen there if things don't cooperate. But I'm happy to be here for Vlad. I wonder if Vlad is familiar with the name Wally Pipp. I don't know. I'm just saying. I just wonder if he's familiar with it because, he set this up. This was kind of his idea here for me to come fill in. And I don't know, did he make his bed? Now he has to lie in it. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, it remains to be seen. So talking about opening day, what do you do? I want to live vicariously because I'm going to unfortunately have to be working. I screwed up and didn't put in a vacation day. I screwed up there. And I'm assuming that you're going to be hanging out, waking up early, and you're going to be doing some stuff. So let the listeners know. What is opening day going to be like for Paul Spohr?
Very excited for opening day. So when I was still in the corporate workforce, I worked at Dell and then at Tableau, always took opening day off. Definitely one of the first things, when the new year of vacation was open, boom, that's the first place I'm going. Other people are going to like Christmas and Thanksgiving and all that. That's for the birds. I got to get into my late April or late March or early April date and figure out which is the opening day. But obviously now I'm blessed to be able to write about baseball and talk about it for a living. So it's my job to be able to watch opening day, and I love it. So Justin and I are going to be doing a Patreon watch party. We have a Patreon for the podcast that a lot of people have been supporting, which we're super grateful for. And one of the perks of that is we do watch parties in our Discord, which you can, you can watch games with people because it's your own private thing. It's not like we're streaming it out on Twitch or anything. So we're going to do that. I think we are being accused of jinxing the Seattle Minnesota game because we switched our game to that. Well, actually, we started with the Nats Mets, thinking that we would get DeGrom way back when. We're like, okay, this is what's going to be the game. Well, then he gets pushed, so then we move to that Mets or to that Mariners Twins game, and that gets postponed. So we're being seen as a hex now. So I'm afraid to ruin like the Guardians Royals game because that's also at the 3 o'clock hour. So hopefully we don't ruin that. We might actually have to upshift to the 1 o'clock hour and go for the Corbin Burns Kyle Hendricks game, but even that could be in danger in Chicago. So we're gonna do the Patreon watch party. Fangraphs is gonna have an all-day chat, which I'll likely dip into after our watch party, and then I'll be streaming on Twitch for the evening games, which obviously, again, we're not being able to watch them on Twitch or anything, but I'll be having them on my iPad and we'll be talking about them in my Twitch chat and everything. So it's an all-day affair, three different main events for me, and I truly can't wait.
Wow, that's exciting. Okay, well, I'll try and tune in at some point if I can sneak away on my lunch, or even when I get off work I'll check out what you have going on.
Come through. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I know you've been crushing it on Twitch with MLB The Show. I see that that's
very excited. The new game is out. It went live for everybody yesterday. There was pre-order bonus of playing on April 1st if you got that, but now everyone can have it. And it's been great so far. I'm very excited for the new game.
Wow. Sweet. Okay. We've been talking about this postponements and what they're going to do and the conundrums that they're going to do. And we will get into that. But we've got the first fab out of the way, right? We mm-hmm. saw that come and go, especially with us having our first main event in Las Vegas, which was prior to still having some more news and things like that getting built up. Now we're preparing ourselves for this first week where we have in the NFBC, you can set your hitters on Thursday and then reset them Friday through Sunday. Whereas once the teams lock for the pitchers, that's it and they're set. Is there anything for you that noticing in any of your teams that you aren't sure what to do? If it's it's a pitcher over one, you know, 1A versus 1B, are you questioning the spot that they're pitching in? Would you rather roll a reliever? On the hitting side, I'm assuming that we're just going to try and jam in every hitter for Thursday, right? And then we're going to reset and look at things over the weekend.
Exactly. You're hoping to get as many games as you can in this first set. The problem is because so many of the series are in the Midwest and East, they're all susceptible to the weather, right? Obviously, weather is worse in some spots than others. But I mean, like I mentioned, even that Cubs game there, the forecast is 43 and rainy. So that puts that in danger. So I think it's hard to work too much on the lineup stuff if it involves teams in that Midwest and Eastern range, because they're just as likely to get canceled as the games that are already canceled. And so that can kind of create that trickle effect. I did look at like Cincinnati, and particularly a guy that I really like this year, Jake Fraley, with four games. One is against a lefty with Max Fried on the first one, but then there's three straight righties. That's in Atlanta, so I wonder if I might consider playing him. He was a reserve pick, but I might consider playing him over somebody in the Midwest or out East right now. I need to look over the teams, kind of see who the options are, but that's definitely something I'm looking at. And then there was one play that I made specifically for the early season that I'm now hoping will pan out the way it's supposed to, which is Kyle Gibson was a late round draft pick because of his setup against Oakland and then at Miami in the first two starts of the season. He's always kind of a streamer anyway, but an early season streamer, he looked like a great pickup for those two starts. And then we'll kind of play it from there, whether or not he becomes a team streamer that I just put on my reserve or treat him as a full on streamer and send him back out into the waiver pool.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, every year it feels like we're having these weather problems. How hard would it be for the MLB when they're doing the scheduling to say Minnesota is going to play somewhere indoors, Boston's going to play against the Oakland A's. Yep. You know, let's send these teams to the West. Let's send these teams to indoors, you know, for the NL and AL for the first couple of weeks, right? That's all we have to do. Maybe 10 to 14 games it would take to just not have these PPDs.
You would think that there would be a way to kind of maximize it a little bit more, but they don't really seem to even try. They just kind of have it as a normal spread where some, you know, a handful on the East, handful in the Midwest, handful in the West. I don't like, I'd have to kind of map out, right, exactly what you could do, because it wouldn't have to be all West, right? Toronto has a dome. You know, Milwaukee can close the roof. So they got some spots in the Midwest and East that you could still use. Tampa Bay can be home. So there's plenty of ways to do it. I know they want to spread out home openers though, so that not everyone's home opener has to be like that second week. Sometimes it's to have the festivities of the true opening day or whatever. But there seems like a way to maximize it better than we're currently getting, because I do think we get a rash of postponements every single year. It may be inevitable. I've never made a schedule before. It seems really difficult to make a schedule of this size. I will grant that. But I don't feel like they're doing their best to try to curb these personally.
Charlotte agrees.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you all done drafting? Is that
it? Yes. Okay. I actually helped a friend of mine, Colin Weatherwax. We split a main, but then he had a 750 OC yesterday that I drafted for him because he was unavailable. And that was my last little get scratch that itch one more time. And guess who I got? Julio Rodriguez. We had to get the FOMO pick. Colin and I are in lockstep on things. So he's just like, treat the team as your own, go out there and draft it how you want. And he actually was able to kind of get in my ear in text for half of it. So we were still talking, and I was like, hey, I'm about to pull the J-Rod trigger. He's like, do it. So we got in on a little Julio Rodriguez action in the sixth round there, which was actually kind of low relative to where he's been going. I saw him go as high as, I think, what was it, like 44 to
48? Eric Everly. 48? Oh, maybe 44. Okay.
Yeah, whatever Vlad tweeted out was the one I'm referencing. And so that was like really high there to Eric Heberling. And listen, I get it though. And I paid fourth round for Bobby Witt. So I'm not here to throw stones in any way, shape, or form. Julio Rodriguez has amazing upside as well. So I totally, totally get going out there and saying, I want that guy.
Yeah, I have. So I drafted Julio Rodriguez in Barf, and it was before the speak of him making the roster and him exploding in spring and before the helium. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you started to see it and feel it with Julio and especially with Witt. You actually, when you took him in the Las Vegas main, that was the, at the four turn there, that was the min. And now mm-hmm. that's starting. If you fast forward to the ADP over like the last 3 days, the last 13 main events, that's now like the ADP, right? So like, that's where he's starting to go, is you have to pop him there if you want him. And I'm weird with some of these rookies. Now I'm like, I want Josh Lowe to be the one that does the best out of all of them, because now he's, you know, available in X amount of leagues. I believe it's 44% of free agent in main event leagues. He's available and people cut him, and he's got that prospect pedigree too. And albeit the Rays are the Rays and they could send his ass down in a week or platoon him or something like that. Sure. But it's just for me when I see somebody like, oh, well now I don't have to pay a, you know, obviously he's probably not going to pan out, but I do like to see some of these rookies that end up without the draft capital that are able to provide some goodness as well. Speaking of Josh Lowe, yeah, he is available in 44% of main events. Mm-hmm. Do you see him causing the first, whatever we want to call it, chaos, Fabageddon, Fabapalooza? I know we have all these weird names for a player that's going to cost, what do we call that, more than 15% of the budget?
Yeah, you know, I don't know exactly what the cutoff is, but when you're looking at guys that could put out the big triple digit bids and people are going to be going after, that's going to be a key focus for sure. We'll see if any sort of like injuries or even late trades open things up any further to create other guys. But you know that Josh Lowe is going to be out there and he's going to be targeted big time. He was somebody I really did like this year, and I was actually going for in a lot of DCs. But then as we got closer to main event time and he didn't have a job, and they didn't trade Kevin Kiermaier, which was kind of the guess that I was taking. I know he has that contract. I thought they would include like a prospect somewhere and get that off the books to clear a spot for Lowe or Vidal Brujan. But then I guess they just couldn't get anybody to take that contract. So then it came down to Margot or Meadows, and Meadows was the guy. And he happened to go to my favorite team. So I'm actually quite psyched about that. But I love Josh Lowe is the bottom line. Got him in three leagues. Got him in three DCs, and now I will be targeting him in the mains there because he's a power speed guy. And look, I had we were talking about it on Twitch chat after the trade, and had a really reasonable, and I love when people are super reasonable about things. It can be shocking sometimes. I know that sounds a little rude, that like I'm being condescending, but one of the chatters was like, what about 15, 15, 230? I'm like, yes, that's very reasonable there. You're not coming in with like 25, 25, 290 for Josh Lowe. That's the expectation, right? It's like, no, 15, 15, 230 is exactly the kind of projection that you should have for Josh Lowe, which because he has a
that's
lot of
still so
missed.
Good.
Yeah, I think, and that's still super, super useful. And so I was like, yes, that is where your expectations should lie. And that is game-changing to come off the wire. The batting average is tough at 230, but it's not killer anymore. We know that guys that can live in the 230, 2.25 to say 250 range, that used to be something you didn't want on your fantasy team, even like 250. Nowadays, you take 250 all day if they're giving you double-digit steals, and you take 230 as well. So I think that is something where Josh Lowe will be. They do have options if he is bad, but I do think he gets a few weeks to really show that he can belong. And if not, then they might turn to Brujan. But I'm in, and I do think he's going to be expensive. So we'll see where Josh Lowe goes. I probably stopped short of, you know, 200, 250, but you're going to have to put in a triple digit bid if you get him. I'm sure there'll be some leagues where he goes cheaper, but I doubt it'll be the leagues I'm in, that's for sure.
Yeah, and especially if those teams already feel the need for speed a little bit, if they came out of those drafts and went, ah, you know what, I was a little bit light on speed, I certainly could use this upside here. That's I can see those bids getting out of control. It'll be exciting to hear and see some of those bids on Sunday night. Talking about your Tigers, people are starting to like them on Twitter, including myself. Mm-hmm. I drafted some Javi Baez this year. I've got some Heimer Candelario, stacked them up in a main event. And now they bring in Austin Meadows to thicken things up in the middle of the lineup. Do you, so there's a couple things. If you were to draft again, I know that you're done. Does he stay in the same area for you in regards to like your outfield rankings? Would he be pushed up? Would he be pushed down? Do you think that He gets more burn against left-handed pitching because we know that the Rays are extremely aggressive when somebody can't, produce against a certain handedness of pitcher. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the Tigers have a longer rope for him, so to speak, in that aspect? What are your thoughts overall on this?
Yeah, I think we could see the volume tick up a bit, at least in terms of expectation, versus when Austin Meadows was still with the Rays. However, as you mentioned, because he struggles against lefties, is that necessarily a good thing? Are you trading some runs, ribbies, some residual homers, and maybe a steal or two? He had 12 stolen bases back in 2019. Don't forget that. Although it was 12 for 19, and then 4 for 7 last year. So the Tigers are allowing players to run more. Meadows might not be that guy. He might be more of that 3 to 6 type of range. But do you want that? Do you want those extra plate appearances that might hurt the batting average? Or would you rather he is curated a little bit more, and that way Austin Meadows keeps the average up a little bit by avoiding some lefties? I think he'll still sit sometimes. Eric Haas is actually kind of an easy platoon there right now until Riley Green gets back. But that's the real key. What happens when Riley Green gets back? I think what it immediately does is start to cut into Miguel Cabrera's playing time against right-handers. And we'll see what's going on. Obviously, with Badu and Grossman are doing what they're supposed to, they're not going anywhere. I think Badu will have sits against lefties at times, but I don't think he's going to be a full-on platoon, and nor do I think Meadows will be. He's a great fit for the Tigers. They need a left-handed thump in the middle of the lineup, and this is a good pick because he's a mid-20s to low-30s home run hitter, and I think he's going to really fulfill the needs that the Tigers are looking for. Obviously, that park can be a little treacherous in center field, but if you've got pull power, both pull sides will give you the power that you need there. So I'm not too worried about Austin Meadows' home run count coming way down. And I think that I would still keep him around the high 500s plate appearance projection there. I would not bump him up too much. And because of that, I also didn't move him too much in the rankings, because Meadows going from the Rays to the Tigers, that's a great team that we already believe in, to a team that's on the rise that we believe in, but they're not guaranteed yet either. So just kind of kept him neutral there. I do think he's going to be a great pickup for the Tigers.
Similar to Javi Baez, I think that this ballpark, it was Zach Betancourt who put this thought into my mind when looking into things. The spacious park there at Comerica could be a bit of a help for Javi Baez and Austin Meadows when it comes to batting average and a little bit of luck. And so I think that could potentially, maybe regress just a tiny bit of power, not much, but we've heard from a lot of players that it's really hard to hit at the Trop. And yeah, we've seen players struggle there, especially Nelson Cruz. Look what happened to Willy Adames when he left. So we do see some effects of players, leaving there and being able to put the bat on the ball just a little bit more. So the spacious park might be able to help players like Javi Baez and Austin Meadows in that aspect. But overall, yeah, I like it as well. It's still a young, talented player that can play ball. And I think some people might be sleeping on him, including myself, because I was pretty much out on him just because of due to the fact that I was concerned about potentially getting buried in the lineup against lefties, et cetera. But I think that the rope is going to be a little bit longer here. I've been in on the Hector Neris train, and I know there's been reports about Ryan Pressly having some ticks down in velocity. That was also the case last season, and he did a fine job. And then lo and behold, the Houston Astros ink him to a 2-year, $30 million deal. So that's quite the bit of confidence that they're giving Pressly going into the 2022 season. It doesn't change anything from a draft perspective, but that means that they're confident he's healthy, right?
Yeah, exactly. I read it the same way there with Houston and Pressly saying, we're not too concerned about this. I think he's had velo issues in the spring before. Oh, wow. I'm sorry to interrupt here. Are you seeing this? Are you seeing the Jose Ramirez 5-year, $124 million extension?
They paid him?
Yeah, they paid him. They paid him.
Cleveland rocks.
Cleveland. Holy cow. Sorry to derail there. I was going to go look up the exact figures on the Pressly deal. And I saw that and I was like, oh, okay.
Deal includes full no trade clause.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow. Anyway, let me get back to that. We can come back to Ramirez in a moment, but I like I like that they signed Presley there. I'm a big Presley guy, so I was actually really excited about seeing this deal. I wasn't too worried about the velo. It's definitely something to keep in mind, but I hadn't heard anything that outside of the velo ratings themselves, I hadn't heard anything that really made me all that concerned. Like they weren't pulling him back on his outings or anything like that. So I wasn't too worried about Presley. I do think Nerys is a great backup should anything happen, or if they wanted to move Presley back into like a fireman's role. But beyond that, I was totally fine with still continuing to draft Presley, even with the lowered velos.
I have a lot of Hector Nerys, and I, like you mentioned, he could still be usable. Some of these guys that come in a high leverage on good teams can walk away with some wins. I think, who was it last year? Kendall Graveman kind of fell into a bunch of those. Hector Nerys, someone similar. Or if Dusty wants to hold back on like back-to-back save opportunities, which we're seeing more teams do each and every season, then Nerys could be a viable option as well with the high strikeout rate and if he's able to keep those ratios down. Okay, J-Ram, what does this do? So I'm glad, first and foremost, he doesn't go to the Padres being a Dodgers fan.
Yeah,
I think that would have made things really, really scary there. And now Cleveland's spending money, $124 million. So shout out to them. Yes,
you know,
yes,
like,
absolutely.
This is kind of like the Colorado thing. You'll probably see some snarks surrounding it today. And it's like, what do you want? You can't have it both ways. We can't crap on them for always trading players and breaking everything down every time, you know, somebody gets expensive, and then clown on them when they finally make a deal here. So I hope we don't see that sort of pushback that, like, because I still don't believe in Colorado's front office, right? They're still kind of a dysfunctional front office, but it is a new regime relative to the one that made the Arenado trade. I liked the Bryant and McMahon moves. I know they don't marry well with what they've done previously, but you have to start somewhere. And I think this is the same thing with Cleveland. I don't like everything that they've done as an organization, crying poor and pretending they have no money when every owner has money, because they've had such talent that they don't have to be shoestring. If they just put some money into this team the last few years, Cleveland should have been a bit of a powerhouse because of that pitching. If they'd have given Ramirez and Reyes anything offensively last year, they could have been in the playoffs. They were 80-82, Maddie, with two offensive players. Well, Miles Straw was pretty good too. I'll give him his credit. I'm not a huge fan in fantasy of the steel only guys or the steel primarily guys, but he was pretty solid too. But three guys on offense, and they were still damn near 500 because the pitching was so good. So they're putting money in finally here. I like this. Ramirez is an absolute stud. He should age brilliantly. 5 years isn't even crazy because it's going to be ages 29 through 32. So you're not taking him into his mid or late 30s with a guy who strikes out almost as much as he walks. That's brilliant. So I love this move for Cleveland. He obviously has shown he can be a god there. And if the offense does get better, I do actually like it to improve this year. There's some pieces I like. Can Rosario and Jimenez finally take steps forward? You know, I know there's been some late fantasy buzz on Bradley Zimmer because of his power and speed. I'm a big Josh Naylor fan. I know he's working back from that broken leg. If he can get back, I think there's some real power there. I know Stephen Kwan has been a fan favorite out there of a lot of folks. So if they can finally put some offense together around Ramirez, he's shown that he's an absolute beast, and getting a little help will only make things better for him.
Go out and sign Michael Conforto to a really cheap deal. Come on, let's go.
Yes, take the discount there, right? You know, Obviously check the medicals and see what's up. If they see something that's, you know, far too treacherous, they're not going to do it. But if they see enough to think like, hey, even if he has to not really start playing for us until May because we got to build him up, give him some time to get situated, I'd take 5 months of him right now. Plus, if they do a multi-year deal, you get 5 months plus whatever years you add on the back end of that. I agree. They've needed outfield forever, right? Like for the last 6 years, it seems like outfield is what we're always talking about with them, and they never seem to address it. So Cleveland getting Conforto, that would be hot, but I do love this Ramirez extension. Well done for them. You know, with all the trade rumor talks, the Ramirez news I expected more than anything was, oh, he's traded to Toronto or he's traded to San Diego. So to see Cleveland actually ink him, I like it.
It's a lot better than the ownership naming somebody that, and then they go, that guy's dead. We'll cross him off then. Certainly better than that. And now the Cleveland Guardians have some new logos. So they have got new jerseys, new caps.
New gear.
And now you know that Jose Ramirez is going to be staying in town for at least 5 years. So
yeah, you can confidently buy that Guardians Ramirez jersey and not think that it's going to become a you know, collector's item or a vintage player, you know, by the All-Star break.
Absolutely. Let's get into some conundrums. Let's kind of sift through the minds of what it looks like when we go click on our teams in NFBC, and then we click set transaction, set lineup, and we look at what we're going to do. And it's like we mentioned earlier, for at the NFBC with the hitters, you can roll out the hitters on Thursday and then reset those for the weekend. And then for week two on Monday, you'll be able to roster those hitters Monday through Thursday, and then they reset over the weekend, Friday through Sunday. And then for the pitchers, that's just, well, once the team plays, they are locked for the entire week. So the first one I want to ask you is about Shohei Ohtani. He is set to pitch on opening day, and then he is set theoretically to hit for three games that weekend. Is that correct? So he's going to pitch one and hit for three. If you have some Shohei Ohtani, and obviously maybe if you're about to take a zero somewhere on pitching, maybe you look to use Ohtani a little bit more towards the pitching. But do you have any Ohtani, and how are you using him?
I didn't get him this year, and it was not for any sort of lack of interest. Extremely interested in him, but for the most part, I was picking late in drafts, and then the one time I had early, it was the number two, and we went with the aforementioned Jose Ramirez. So I didn't get him. I honestly feel like Ohtani was super underpriced this year. I didn't really figure why he was toward the middle there of the first round and not, I don't know, third. Like, he's so amazing. I really thought that he should have been in the top five there. You know, if you want to go pitcher, that's totally understandable there. So Cole could fit in anywhere there in that top five. But after that, I value him either right after Soto or right above, with Trey Turner and Jose Ramirez being the top two. Then I'm talking Ohtani. And I don't really understand why he was kind of stuck in that 7-12 range. By the way, I want to be in the draft where he went 21st. I just clicked on now this is from the entire year, from October 1st till today, but apparently in some draft Ohtani was 21st pick.
But Zach and I got him in the tag team pick 18.
Third pick. That's crazy. Yeah. In one main, he went 16. Why couldn't that have been my main? I would have opened Woodruff Ohtani all day long. I love Ohtani. But anyway, enough of me going off on that. I did think he was super underpriced. But the big thing is, as far as using him as a pitcher, I doubt it, because I drafted him as a premium hitter. I like kind of having the pitching backup. If my hitting is really popping off and I could use a little sprinkle of help in pitching, I might dabble with putting Ohtani in there every once in a while. But for the most part, it's hitter, hitter, hitter. That's why you've got him. And it's not like you're facing a cupcake there with Houston. So do you really want to open against Houston there and then give up the offensive games? Because isn't, with the new rule, can't he hit all four of these games? I thought he could play.
He could, yeah.
And, you know, so he could still hit after he pitches. But either way, even if he's just hitting for the three games, I know it's Odorizzi, Verlander, and Urquidy, you know, decent pitcher in Odorizzi, and then two good ones in Verlander and Urquidy, but it's still Shohei Ohtani. He's matchup proof. So I'm still going with him as a hitter this week.
What an absolute unit.
he's so unreal. And more about him later.
He's the only player that projects, you know, just looking at the bat X, for 40 plus home runs and 20 plus stolen bases, and people were sleeping on him. I think it's the fact of, do you remember when they first started the hitting pitching? We don't know when to hit him. We don't know when to pitch him. And then he got hurt, and then that would occur again. I think that that's still kind of in the back of people's heads, maybe a little bit. Like, they have it down now. Fortunately, the Angels are finally figuring shit out. And it seems like the way to utilize him is just to utilize him, right? You don't need to baby this guy. Just let him go out there and do what he's just blessed and given to do. And exactly. they're finally doing that. And he's healthy. So, I'm so excited to watch him. I actually got him in one main event and in the tag team. So I'm certainly invested in Shohei Ohtani, and I'm looking forward to rooting him on this year.
Very jealous of that pickup there. Nicely done.
How about the Dodgers rotation? They start off at Coors Field. So you have Walker Buehler, Julio Urias, and Clayton Kershaw pitching at Coors Field. And the last I had saw, Dave Roberts wasn't going to be pushing his guys too far into the game. He was hoping for maybe five innings pitched. probably around 75, 80 pitches, which doesn't, you know, maximize a ceiling here. And then when you go to Coors Field, what's the floor? I know it's really difficult when you invested, maybe not for Clayton Kershaw because people were drafting him, you know, rounds 8 through 10, but you spent a first or second round pick on Walker Buehler and a second or third round pick on Julio Urias. Mm-hmm. Do you have the huevos to roll those guys out, or what are you doing in this situation?
I do. I am going to roll them out there. It's difficult. Coors is undefeated. I actually wouldn't clown anybody for going ahead and taking the pass on it. I'm not suggesting that games in April count less than those in September. The reason that we kind of change our outlook on them is the time you have to recover from things if they go poorly in April versus September. Obviously, it's a start, right? And each start means the same. Six innings is six innings. But again, if things go sideways with Buehler, I have time to get back and kind of figure out how to, you know, counteract those six earned runs or whatever if he gets beat up. I don't have Arias anywhere. I do have some Buehler, though. I'm going to take that shot. There are just a handful of guys, and it really comes down to kind of those first, second, third, maybe fourth round starters that I will still start in Coors. But for the most part, I'm very down to sit guys that are going to Coors. But for me, I'm still going to start my ace, and that includes Buehler for sure.
And on one bright side, I will say it is a little bit colder than it is during the summer for Colorado. So if there is one thing, it will be just a little bit colder than usual, which could help the pitchers just a tiny bit. How about John Gray at Toronto? So the helium has risen and risen and risen. I can't believe it. I'm so happy. I love to see it. Yes. And I my Twitter profile like 3 years ago, well, 5 or 6 years ago, was president of the John Gray fan club. And then it was, and then it became, somebody created the Bart Simpson, do not draft John Gray, do not draft John Gray. They made that for me. And that was like my Twitter, you know, the little banner there. And then it changed to former president of the John Gray fan club. But we've come full circle, and now he was getting jumped, I believe, all the way up into the 11th and 12th rounds of main events currently. But his first starts at Toronto. So what the hell are we doing there?
You know, this is another one that, like, if someone passes, I will certainly get it. I'm inclined to give him a shot. I like John Gray. I'm a big John Gray fan. I'm excited for him to get out of Colorado. You know, we don't usually we've been waiting for him and or Germán Márquez to get out of there. And at the same time, I totally understand why Colorado, you know, will not trade Germán Márquez. They have a great deal. And he's an awesome pitcher. And whenever you have an awesome pitcher in Colorado, you got to do everything you can to keep him, which is why they should have re-signed Gray. But the fact that they didn't can be a fantasy boon for us here in our game. And I really like him going to Texas. Obviously, going into Toronto is not particularly fun, but with the humidor there, it does neutralize things. Against that lineup, you probably need like 10 humidors. That doesn't really make sense. I don't think humidor effects stack on each other like that, but you know what I mean. It's still scary. I totally get sitting John Gray here, but I'm going to take the shot, see where my guy's at, and I'm going to roll him out there. I'm a little bit more open with my starts early on, as you're probably understanding here, but based on both that and the Coors thing. But I do manage things maybe a little bit differently early on because, like I said, I have the whole season to kind of recover if I need to. I think it's a calculated risk. I'll put John Gray in Toronto this week for sure.
Plus this first weekend, I know this game's a marathon, man, but for whatever reason, I use this first weekend as a sprint. So rolling out as many relievers as I can. If I have Jameson Taillon on a team, give me my Nick Whitgren or Hector Neris or whoever the hell it is. I want all the volume, man. And it comes with taking that risk, right? Because you are going to be really sad come opening day. You drafted John Gray, you bought back in, you've got your weird looking thrift store wolf shirt on, and you're howling, ow! And then you sit him, and then he goes out there and deals. You're going to be fucking sad. It's, you know, I think you'll be more sad not taking the shot on somebody like that, or those pitchers in Coors, versus them getting rocked. And you're like, all right, I can wear that. It's the beginning of the year. Let's go. Let's correct it.
Exactly. And That's the thing, right? I'm always like, what's going to bother me more? It's the same thing. It's same kind of calculus I do in a draft about whether or not I want to take somebody well above ADP. How angry am I going to be if they get drafted versus if they make it back to me? You know, how happy am I going to be? What's that equation? Am I going to be livid because I believe in John Gray this year and I like him? Am I going to be livid if he goes 6 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts on my bench? Or am I going to be more mad if he gives up 6? Again, for me, I'm going to be more mad if he kills. I'll take the risk of him possibly getting blasted a bit against Toronto. So, I mean, listen, if you've drafted John Gray in any year of his career thus far, you've messed with him in Coors. This isn't even that bad, right?
Yeah.
Like this is Toronto. Yeah, Toronto's awesome. I'm not here to crap on Toronto's offense in any way, shape, or form. But I've lived through the Colorado years with John Gray. I can take a humidor infused start in Toronto. I'm not that worried.
Yep. All right. I like it. All right. Let's go, John Gray. I hope he fucking deals against Toronto. Okay. Now, similar to, albeit the Dodgers are much more talented and they're veterans and they're pitching at Coors, we have a lot of Cincinnati young pitchers going. We've got Reaver San Martin going and Hunter Green are both slated to pitch this weekend on the road against the defending World Series champion Atlanta Braves. If you have Hunter Green or Reaver San Martin, are you rolling either of them out? Now, this is, you know, they didn't cost as much in draft capital. Yeah. These are rookies facing an experienced team. Do we feel the same about these guys versus John Gray and the Dodgers?
Me personally, I do not. These are the type of guys that you are streaming for a reason and you're trying to avoid these type of starts. This is kind of going in and looking for trouble at this point because they don't really have a great opportunity, a great upside to thwart the Braves here. So yeah, easy sits for San Martin and Green, not the same as Jay Gray. Got to sit this one out here. I think you're asking for trouble otherwise.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. Plus, we don't know the leash on these pitchers. These guys, if they start, you know, 2 walks, I could see these guys get yanked in an inning and a third, especially with David Bell. No clue how they're going to treat these young pitchers. So definitely if you were contemplating on using them, I know some of you guys could be looking at your SP 8 or 9 spot and saying, well, I have Jameson Taillon and I have, let's say, Tony Gonsolin. Those guys aren't usable this weekend and you're out of relievers because they're already in filling in for some spots. Then I could see why you're in a situation where you would use them, but just know, even though that they're young and we see that upside and that's why you drafted them, this is a really, really tough spot to begin this season. Okay. We talked about the Seattle Mariners and the Minnesota Twins. They're going to be postponed tomorrow on opening day, which is Thursday, April 7th. And they are slated to have their opening day pushed back as of now to Friday, April 8th. And that is similar to the New York Yankees and Boston Red Sox. You and I were talking before before recording that the SP3s could be impacted by this if they get pushed back one more day. If they get pushed back one more day, that means that there's no third game. And if that happens, that would blemish Marco Gonzalez, Jordan Montgomery, Bailey Ober, and Tanner Houck. So we might just be forced, obviously, to start these guys. If you have the Gonsolin example, if you have SP4s, SP5s, obviously you're going to thrust them in there. But if you have, let's say, an additional reliever, what are you doing?
I tell you what I'm doing that I don't usually have to do for fantasy. I'm getting on weather.com and I'm investigating. I'm seeing what's up. You know, how much is this rain looking to stick? It's going to be cold. I think that's going to be a given that it will remain cold, but will the rain continue? And if the precipitation looks like it will dissipate there for the weekend, then I'm going to be more inclined to start those guys because those are quality guys there. Those are guys that you have some expectation from. They're definitely in that John Gray type of category where you bought in on these guys because you really like them. So I totally get wanting to start them. So just check the weather. I know it's weird. We don't usually check the weather before we make our start sit decisions in season long. That's more of a DFS thing. But hey, if you play DFS, you're already accustomed to it. If not, again, just get on weather.com and see what's up.
Yeah, I'm hoping we get to see that Jordan Montgomery Tanner Houck game.
Oh, that would be so fun. Those are two really exciting pitchers.
Yes. Are there any that you wanted to add? Is there any conundrum that you're looking at a starter
I think we covered it brilliantly.
We covered
it.
Okay.
You had the right list there, and then we added those SP3s as a consideration too.
Cool. Okay. Well, let's get on to our predictions. You and I, we're going to discuss and give shout outs to National League and American League end of the year rewards for Rookie of the Year, Cy Young, MVP. Talk about who we think going to the World Series and then who is going to win it. So, Paul, I will start with you and your NL Rookie of the Year. Who is that?
My NL Rookie of the Year is one of the few guys who's not called up to start the season. But as we well know, you don't necessarily need to be up all year to get Rookie of the Year. So it won't be easy going against your guy. I like your pick a lot. But I'm going to go with Alek Thomas for Arizona. Really interesting Diamondbacks outfield prospect. Who hit very well at the high minors two-level season last year, double and triple A, 134 WRC plus in double A for 329 plate appearances, jumped to triple A for 166 plate appearances, and put up a 168 WRC plus. Even better, 100 is average. That's weighted runs created plus. And so that means he was 68% better than league average in triple A. Alek Thomas, hits for some pop, can run a little bit. He's not great on the bases. Like last year, he had 13 steals in 22 attempts. That's not great. But I'm looking at batting average, power, and then of course runs and ribbies, because I do think when Alek Thomas gets called up, he'll be somebody in the top half of the lineup with a little contribution of speed. I think he could be somebody that if he comes up, say, by Memorial Day, could still put 7 stolen bases on the board. It's the power and the batting average that I'm really looking at, though. Very, very strong hitter. Definitely debuts this year, and I think it could be a Rookie of the Year campaign. So I'm going with Alek Thomas of Arizona.
I like that. And the thing about the team that he plays on, it's a team that would let him try and run.
Yes.
Especially because of where they're going to be at and the landscape of what they're doing at the current moment is, let's see what you got. So, okay, I dig it. Mine's a little bit safer. It's Seiya Suzuki. I'll be moving to Chicago in 2 weeks, and I'll be watching him live quite a bit. And I think that with his high contact skills, his plate discipline, getting on base a lot with the high walk rate, he's got a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, and he's going to be playing every single day with that contract that they gave him in Chicago. He should be hitting in the thick of that lineup. He's their main attraction now, and I think that he will be the guy just by sheer volume and lack of competition and everything around him. So Seiya Suzuki, I actually didn't even get a draft any of him, which is really, really sad on my end. Typing him into my player search. Yeah. And I'd like to have some, so I think I'm going to do a cut line tonight or an OC, to get one last shot at Suzuki. Would like to have a little bit of him if possible. Moving on to the AL Rookie of the Year. I went the chalky side with Julio Rodriguez.
We both kind of did, though, because there's multiple chalk picks there, I think, in the American League.
Yeah. And I thought that you were going to go with Bobby Witt Jr. because we know that you've got your boy in the main event when you
I went Homer instead.
And I like it.
I went Homer with Spencer Torkelson.
Ah, he slipped in my main event draft, man. You know, like Zach Nelson popped him late.
He is one of the guys that even as he was called up and locked in, Spencer Torkelson has not shot up the board. I wonder if it's something to do with just first base being as deep as it is, and maybe they just don't see him as much of a game changer. With J-Rod and Witt, they obviously have the speed potential. So I was surprised because I still got some Torkelson shares at not an expensive rate, even when he was locked onto the team. But yeah, I took him for the AL Rookie of the Year. I love Witt, and I do think he's going to be in strong contention with J-Rod as well. But I went Homer, and I'm going to go with Torque.
Before getting into our Cy Young predictions, I wanted to give you and Doug Thornburn a shout out. And I've told Dougie this every year when we catch a buzz at Barf, we get all drunk and we start hugging on each other. I'm like, oh man, you and Paul's taught me how to dissect pitching and analyze it, et cetera. But that is the fact. If some of these people do not know, you and Doug Thornburn used to write a pitching Bible in my mind and aspect. And that was the pitching guide that you guys would put together, which was a deep analysis of a bunch of different pitchers with a literature from you and then Doug giving grades on mechanics, balance, torque, et cetera. And that was when I actually got into the NFBC. And that was what geared me towards what I was looking for when analyzing starting pitchers or relievers. Awesome. And that was the year we got into the NFBC and drafted Corey Kluber. And that's a huge shout out to you.
Thank you. That's our claim, right? That's our big one there. Everything married up. I remember us talking about him going in because we used to do our things separately. I would write all my write-ups and he would do the mechanics. We didn't want to influence one another. So if I had a big spicy write-up on somebody that I really liked, and then Doug came in and said, hey, the mechanics are really bad, we weren't just trying to align just to align, right? There's two different things here. I like the talent that the guy showed. Doug saying, be careful of the mechanics. What do you do? Things couldn't have aligned more perfectly on Kluber. We were both so in. And we didn't know that the other kind of had him as a riser, as a, you know, big sleeper of the year. So when we both did, we were so giddy. And of course, it worked out. That was awesome. We were also diehard Jose Fernandez fans. Who wasn't? But we did our podcast, Tin Stap. We used to do 3.5 hours standing on our head. That was a short one. It was unbelievable, the pods that we used to do. Nowadays, I don't know if you could do 3.5 hours every episode, because with all the pods that are out there, people wouldn't have time to listen to it all. But Doug's one of my favorite people in this entire, just in the world, man. I love Doug Thorburn. He's the man. So appreciate the kind words on that. And Kluber forever. We both adore that man.
Absolutely. Yeah, if time didn't forbid, man, I can't imagine how much time it took for you guys to write that thing.
He didn't have his babies yet. He's got two kids now.
He's got businesses.
All I was doing was basically just working and hanging out. No sort of responsibilities outside of that. So, hey, once a week we got online and we just wanted to talk baseball for 3 to 5 hours.
Yeah, that's great. Well, tell us your NL Cy Young. Who is it?
Sandy Alcantara.
Hot topic.
I'm very big on Sandy Alcantara, and I got to be honest, and I said this in my SP write-up for my rankings this year, which isn't quite as big as the SP guide, but as deep as I can get there, I didn't find the anti-Alcantara case compelling at all. I really didn't think that those that were against him had any sort of quality case against. I'm all for people disagreeing, right? And it's not that, because I like Alcantara, everyone has to agree. I listened to the other side. It was flimsy. Nothing was there. It was, he doesn't have strikeouts. Okay, not yet. He doesn't have 10 point whatever strikeouts per nine under his belt just yet. But doesn't he have every single thing we look for in a budding strikeout ace? He's got the swinging strike rate. He put up a 24% last year, which is pretty darn good, but it included like a 30%. And I think his final 8 to 10 starts, which is just a small sample, but it capped off his season. He has electric stuff. Alcantara has everything that you look for in a budding ace. And yet this pushback that I heard was just so weak that I was like, okay, I'm sticking with it. And I'm continuing to push him up the board. I know we pay a premium for it. And that was a big problem that people had too. Like, well, we have to pay the full price. It's like, well, that's what it's like today in fantasy. These type of guys aren't hidden. And if Doug and I did a guide today, we wouldn't get Kluber the way we did last year, because everything has advanced. You have to dig deeper to find the Kluber type. Like, Kluber would basically be like Patrick Sandoval today. And Patrick Sandoval was not particularly cheap. Everyone was in on him. I call those guys wide awake sleepers. So yeah, Sandy Alcantara is full price already, betting on the come. That's just how it is. You want a discount? You got to turn over a rock and bet on somebody who hasn't had the skill change yet, or hasn't shown the skills that are there, right? You got to bet on Reed Detmers, who has 20 innings in the majors that weren't particularly good, but has the amazing skill. You got to jump on Hunter Green before he gets, before he even gets the call, things like that. So Sandy Alcantara has everything we look for. He's made it 200 innings, basically twice, 197 on the other one. It's all there. I love him. I think he brings the Cy Young home this year, even on a Miami team that I don't expect to necessarily contend.
This is what drives me nuts about people trying to analyze, or when they analyze pitchers and they just look at data, et cetera, and they don't see this room for growth. They don't look at the age. They don't look at the velocity. They don't look at the stuff. They're not watching everything. Yes. Okay. Those same people were saying this shit about Dustin May going into 2021 before May got hurt.
Yep.
Whoa, Dustin May doesn't strike people out, but he's got the stuff, but he's not striking people out. Well, before Dustin May got hurt, he was about to take that next step, like Sandy Alcantara
can do. He was making the leap. Yep.
He was making the leap. He made the adjustments. The changes were happening. He had a 37.6 strikeout rate with a 6.5% walk rate. That was a 31.2 K minus walk. Not saying that's sustainable or that's what he was going to do. But guess what? Sandy Alcantara is a healthy Dustin May, and we've seen 180 and 190 innings. And if he does make that adjustment or that next step, which he certainly could, this guy is not cooked. He's not old. Why do we just see the data and go, stop, this is it. The train can keep going. I think Sandy Alcantara is a healthier example of Dustin May.
I love it.
And if you see what was going on with Dustin May, you should think that that could potentially happen with Sandy Alcantara.
That's a great comp. I didn't think about that. Even right down to the fact that they're sinker ballers who really weren't interested in strikeouts there until Dustin May finally did it. And then, of course, unfortunately got hurt. But I agree that he was that trajectory that he was on. I think he was going to maintain quite a bit of it there had he stayed healthy. I truly can't wait for May to get back because he's one of the best young pitchers in the game.
Yeah, he's a Texas boy too, ain't he?
I think so.
Yeah. I follow him on Instagram. He's just got the boots and the jeans, the tucked in shirt,
right,
the cowboy hat.
Justin, Texas. I don't even know where that is. Okay. That's probably some small town.
My NL Cy Young is Aaron Nola, and I'm choosing him over Walker Buehler, Brandon Woodruff, Julio Urias, and Corbin Burns. Yeah, and it's just the longevity. I think that if we get a little regression back to the mean with some of the strikeouts and luck, I at the end of the year, it just kind of felt weird with some of his struggles and what was happening to him. I was watching his starts and things just didn't feel right. And it looks like he's kind of right in the ship right now. He looks healthy. He looks great. He is a horse. And I love this Phillies team. I think that they're going to win the East. I think that they're going to make some noise in the playoffs. And all of that bodes well for somebody like Nola. He's going to have more innings pitched, health forbidding as of now, versus his teammate Zach Wheeler. And then outside of Zach Wheeler, I don't think that there's anybody there right now really pushing the envelope to say, hey, this is the guy that's getting us to where we're at. And that offense is certainly going to help push up the wins for Nola. The innings will have the strikeout numbers there. I'm really, really excited to see what Aaron Nola can do this year.
I like this pick. And again, this is another one where the fantasy edges have changed over the years, because back in the day, there would have been a decent discount on Aaron Nola based on the 4.63 ERA. But in today's advanced era, where people look under the hood, it's plain as day that he didn't deserve a 4.63. Everyone's in tune with FIP and Sierra, and just looking at strikeouts and walks and putting more stock into that than the ERA. So they see a 25% strikeout minus walk rate, which is fantastic. And it's very clear that Nola is not going anywhere but back up. In fact, I ended up with him as my 8th ranked pitcher with my final SP rank. So I'm totally in on this. I know the defense isn't very good. However, they supported Zach Wheeler last year. Why can't it be that Nola gets the good support this year, right? Every time people bring up the defense with Nola, that ignores what happened for Wheeler, is that he ended up with a 278 with the same defense. So it can break Nola's way and be fine. So I like that pick a lot. I definitely think it's viable too.
I think we galaxy brain ourselves sometimes too much. There's so much data. And sometimes, 100%. You know, it's just like start nitpicking and it's like, man, you can go down a rabbit hole that you don't want
to go
down.
You get these third, fourth level Statcast numbers to talk you off a player. And I'm just like, that's not even predictive, man. And I'm not anti-stat at all. You know, I'm a total dweeb. I love that stuff. But using it as like the only thing that you go off of to make your decisions, I don't know. There has to be a healthy mix of just all of it. Of just, you know, looking at some of the basics, the basic stats of strikeouts and walks are going to lead you the right way more often than not. And again, that doesn't mean I don't like the advanced stuff, but sometimes I feel like people are looking for a reason not to take somebody and they just keep digging until they find it. And it's like, you don't have to take somebody if you don't like them, but you don't have to look for some convoluted reason, you know, because he has a reverse platoon on Thursday nights, you know, with a hard hit rate that balloons if the weather's over 70 degrees. It's like, stop. You know, sometimes you can just be out on a guy too. You don't have to try to nitpick these reasons again. So anyway, sorry for the tangent, but I like the Nola pick a lot.
Like Walter, John Goodman in the movie Big Lebowski. Nihilists, dude. Nihilists.
Nihilists. Great reference there. By the way, do you want to guess how many people live in Justin, Texas, which is where Dustin Mays is from?
Since Texas, I'll go, albeit small populations, I'll think it's a little bit bigger than it might be. I'll go with 15,000.
3,800.
Whoa. Okay. Really, yeah. Really small. Very small. Really small. Okay.
On the outskirts of Fort Worth. It's like a Fort Worth suburb, though. So they're close to a big city, but apparently they themselves are quite tiny there at 3,800.
So he's probably got a statue outside of the high school there or something.
You would think, right? Or it's Dustin Mayfield or something, probably, because right. He's probably the biggest athlete to come out of Justin, Texas. So
yeah.
What are we moving on to next?
AL Cy Young. Yep. And mine's chalky, so we don't really need to talk about that. It's Gerrit Cole. I want to move on to yours.
I'm back in. Listen, I got a strong bias for this guy. It's on the table. It's clear. Everyone knows it. My favorite pitcher of all time is Justin Verlander. And I had him ranked, I had him at my final ranking basically day one. And I told Justin this on the pod, when I ranked him, I think it was like, I think I eventually moved him up a little bit more, but I think I had him like 24 in my very first pitcher ranks. And he's like, what? This is back in the fall. And I was like, listen, the second he's out there throwing 96 mile an hour BBs, everyone's going to get on board with me. So I'm going to cut to the chase and go ahead and put him here. Now, I never had to draft him that high. By the time I had all my shares, I paid much cheaper. But at main event time, he was pitcher 20. He was pick 50 off the board. And it's not that I wouldn't have drafted him there. I absolutely would have. It just didn't break where I was taking him in the two mains that I did. But I love JV. I think he's a unicorn. I don't think they're going to hold him back in any sort of way. If he's good and healthy and pitching well, the reins are off. He's throwing 200 plus and getting back on track. So I think he's going to get back closer to 19. I know TJ returners can be a little bit wobbly when they come back, but that's usually when they come off the 14 month, the just over a year recovery. We're looking at 17, 18 months here. And those extended recoveries are usually better to come back full if the guy's healthy. And so I'm betting on Verlander's health. It's a gamble, but I think if healthy, he's getting another Cy Young before he hangs him up.
Verlander this weekend versus Ohtani and Trout.
Can't wait.
All right, National League and American League MVPs. I have Bryce Harper. I think that the additions that they're making. I do love Philly.
Money where your mouth is.
So I have in the FTN predictions, thing that we have coming out over there. I have Bryce Harper leading the NL in home runs. But I think Kyle Schwarber leading the NL in home runs. But I think overall, the body of work with Bryce Harper, I think you're going to get the batting average. You'll get the 10 plus stolen bases. You're going to get 200 plus in counting stats. And you could still potentially get 40 plus home runs out of that. And if they end up winning that division, I think that Bryce Harper could come away with another MVP. I love your MVP.
Yeah, Turner out there with your beloved Dodgers. He was amazing. I mean, he's an amazing player, just full stop. And then he was truly amazing with the Dodgers when he got out there, the pace that he put up, and always dangerous extrapolating. But just to give you guys an idea of what it was over those 52 games when he was with the Dodgers, his full season pace would have been 31 homers, 34 steals with the .338 average, 87 ribbies, and 128 runs. And that's the thing too. Like we know him as the five category god for our game in fantasy, but it's not like he's some slap hitter that's like speed only. He's got the pop. He's got the middle of the order production that will keep him in MVP candidacy as well. He's on the best team in the league. The numbers are going to be gaudy as hell. And I do think Trey Turner has a great shot to win an MVP, and I think he should be right there. He was fifth last year after a great season, but a full year with the Dodgers, I don't think it's the right thing necessarily, but a lot of voters do focus on team context when they're looking to make their vote, and so his team context will be excellent. He won't have to worry about like being on a crappy Nats team. Trey Turner, NL MVP.
He could potentially have over 100 RBIs this year if he hits third all year.
Isn't that crazy? And he could score 130 runs, go 130, 100 with 30, 30 and a .320 average. Like that's just gross.
Yeah. And when you like, there was a main event team built by Casey Cha and he had pick one and it was a team that he similarly did like a Dalton Del Don build. Right. And just went five straight pitchers, but he even with that first pick didn't go Cole or Burns to build that.
I was in that
build. Okay. Okay.
That was my league.
Okay. And he went Trey Turner, right?
Yep. He took Trey. Yep. But then he went Nola Iglesias, Aroldis Chapman, Morton, Eduardo Rodriguez, and Nathan Eovaldi. And we didn't necessarily expect him to go that. That was the one I did with Colin Weatherwax. That's my joint main. So I got Jose Ramirez there. And it was surprising that he did that. And then he went 7, 8 hitter, 9, 10, 11, 12 hitters in a row after that. So it was a really interesting build from the one side. It was Turner, six pitchers, 12 hitters.
Okay. Like I will message you later on. I'm curious to see how that one unfolds.
It was wild.
Shohei Ohtani for you, huh?
Yeah, super easy here since minus chalk or a repeat pick the way your Cole one was. Don't need to go too deep here. I talked about how I feel that he was underrated in fantasy. He got the MVP last year. I don't think there's any reason that he won't be in contention again, especially if they're good. You know, he won it despite them not being a very good team last year. Imagine if they actually are making the playoffs. I think that will only bolster his case. Not saying it should, but that is the way a lot of voters behave. And so going off of the way the voters look, I think Ohtani has a great chance to repeat.
He's leading off this year. That's going to increase plate appearances. They set the new rule where he doesn't have to come out for the pitching slash DH. So that's going to increase plate appearances. Oh, and then not to mention, he did everything he did last year without Anthony Rendon and Mike Trout. And now Joe Adell's figuring things out. And Jared Walsh is in the lineup, healthy and making contact against lefties right now. So look out for the Los Angeles Angels.
More on that later.
Yep. AL MVP for me is Luis. How do we say it?
It's Robert. To Robert. Okay. And, you know, I just hope we just stick with this. I feel bad because I think it actually is Robert. And he asked people to pronounce it that way. I feel like people were on board and now it's back to Robert. The official pronunciation guide from the White Sox says Robert. So that's what I'm going off of. I always try to get this stuff right. I want to respect people's names. You want to hear your name said the way it's supposed to be. I would do the Robert, but we're back to Robert. Okay. So Luis Robert, talk to us about him winning the MVP.
Yeah, I got to get a jersey. I'm going to go visit him on the South Side when I move to Chicago. And I think with the lineup, I know that we've talked about how awesome this White Sox team is. I don't see anybody being able to put up the numbers in this lineup and the success that they should have in the AL Central, anchored by Lucas Giolito and Dylan Cease. They've got a bullpen that's kind of getting banged up a little bit. They've lost Kimbrel and they lost, the other one? Crochet they lost. Yeah, but they still have some decent depth in the bullpen. I'm going to think is going to add some sort of depth at the trade deadline when it comes to starting pitching. No. And I think Robert, with the high contact, the great plate discipline, the upside in speed, the upside in power, I think that he's just going to run laps around his whole teammate. And it is a good lineup, and that's what he's going to need to boost all of these statistics. But La Pantera is going to be the AL MVP this season.
Such an excellent nickname, by the way.
It is. Yes, it is. Okay, World Series predictions. As a homer, I've got the Dodgers facing the Toronto Blue Jays. But I've got to say, since we don't have the pennant or the NLCS, ALCS championship series listed, I do want to say it is the Angels who lost to the Blue Jays to go to the World Series. Yeah. Okay. So why don't you tell us yours then?
So then I've got the Angels actually winning that series and getting to the World Series against the Brewers.
So would the Brewers be playing the Dodgers?
Yes, they would.
Got the same little deal.
We got there. The same four pack here, but we just picked the two different winners. Angels Brewers. Obviously, I am favoring that Brewers pitching. Not that their offense is bad in any way, shape, or form, but they're known for kind of having that three headed ace monster up front there. I like the lineup to kind of improve this year. A full year of Adamas. Hopefully, Yelich gets healthy again. I'm a big Rowdy Tellez fan. I think their Hunter Renfro pickup was totally underrated, not getting nearly enough attention. McCutchen at the very least should be crushing lefties. Colton Wong is very solid atop the lineup. So I like their lineup. Love their pitching. Quality bullpen. Brewers getting there. And then the Angels. They've done so many things right this year. I think they finally have the pitching horses to get there. They do need things to break for them, right? We need Thor to stay healthy. Patrick Sandoval is going to have a breakout year. I'm big on the Michael Lorenzen transition to starter. Reed Detmers. Shohei needs to stay upright, of course. Like, it's not perfectly set in stone with the pitching, but the path is there. In the past few years that we've been hoping for them to get to the playoffs, we knew that the pitching just wasn't there. They needed way too many things to break their way. This year, they just need the guys that are there to perform. The talent is there. They need the health and a little bit of breakout action from like Patrick Sandoval to hit that next level.
Yeah, even a little sprinkle in a little Jose Suarez as well.
Yeah, don't sleep on Suarez. Has an excellent changeup. He is in that six-man rotation there. I should have mentioned him because he is really intriguing. 24 years old. Don't be surprised if he ends up becoming an interesting fantasy play at some point too.
Yeah, I want to see Mike Trout in the playoffs, man.
Same.
Like, can we get some? Let's get some October Mike Trout.
Trout Ohtani in the playoffs is what we deserve. As baseball fans.
Baseball needs it.
Yes, totally agree.
So, as a homer, I'm going to listen to our manager when he says he guarantees a World Series championship. I'm going to listen. So, I have the Los Angeles Dodgers winning their second World Series in the last three seasons. And it's kind of, again, kind of similar to mine, but the opposite of it, you know, the mirror effect here. You have.
I went with the Angels. I got them going all the way there. You know, obviously it's a flashier pick. I totally get the Dodgers picks. They're right there. But I went with a little bit more of the look at me pick. I will freely admit that. But again, I love this team. I think the talent is there to really have a special season for the Angels. So I'm hoping it comes through.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. Well, we got to get out of here. Before we do, what's up, Paul?
I have to pee really bad. Can I go to the bathroom?
Let's just get out of here. Let's close it
off.
Are
you sure?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, let's just roll. You can follow Paul Spore at Spore on Twitter. Real quick, you talked about your Twitch that you've got going on opening day. Plug anything else you want to do and we'll get you out of here.
Yeah. So Twitter and Twitch, twitter.com/Spore, twitch.tv/Spore. Those are the best places to find me. If as well as my stuff over at Fangraphs, fantasy.fangraphs.com. I'll be right in there all year doing the Sleeper in the Bus podcast. So come check me out. Like I said, you don't have to be a big video game fan to come hang out in the Twitch chat and just talk some baseball. We got plenty of folks who don't even have a video game console. They're just there for the baseball talk. So if you like baseball and you're a night owl, twitch.tv/Spore. I stream 5-6 nights a week.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Vlad, and I greatly appreciate it. And I look forward to hanging out with you again in person. It was great for us to finally be able to meet, even though I had to give you a hug on my tippy toes.
Thank you so much,
Paul. See you later, brother.
Take care.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review, and we'll be back at you next week. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your host on Twitter @_MattyWood_ and @RotoGut. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.